Pot Radio Network is pleased to present Encounter, a public service program here on KSIV that spotlights local Christian events and provides information and resources to enrich your lives. And now, your Encounter host, Judy Redlich.
Ronique Glazer is a single mom of two girls who works as a dispatcher for Magen David Adom, that is in Jerusalem. And on October the 7th, her life changed when a friend's frantic phone call woke her from a deep sleep. She's with me on Encounter today. I'm Judy Redlich. She's talking to you from Israel. And we are so privileged to have you here, Ronique, today.
Thank you.
Ronique, can you share what happened on October 7th?
Definitely. On October 7th, I was woken up by a phone call from a friend saying, the country is on fire. There are bombings and terrorists everywhere. You have to wake up. You're going to be called in soon. And I was very surprised and was half asleep, and I didn't know what he was talking about, but I was very lucky that this friend called me, because a few minutes later, there was a red alert siren in Jerusalem, which is where I live. And I had to wake up my two daughters and take them to a kind of safe room, because we live in an old house, so we don't have a safe room there.
What is a safe room?
A safe room is a room that will keep you safe in case of bombings, because the red alert sirens mean that there are missiles thrown all over the country. And when it arrives to our city, it means that it's directed at Jerusalem, my area of Jerusalem. And everyone needs to go into a room which will keep them safe in case of a bombing, which is a room that is usually has special windows that you can shut that have some sort of iron or very strong covering on them, and also have very strong, very thick walls. So we don't have a safe room to stay at home. We have a room with a very small window towards the hallway, which has a bigger window.
So your houses in Jerusalem don't have safe rooms in every house.
Exactly. Only the new houses do have. Now the law is that every new house, for an amount of years that I'm not sure of exactly, has to be built with a safe room. But I live in an old house, so we don't have a safe room in our house.
And how long ago was that law put into place?
I want to say around 10 years ago, but okay. that's a guess. I'm not
that's
sure exactly how long ago.
No, that's okay. It just gives us some sort of an idea. So you got the call, and you are a dispatcher. Tell us a little bit about your job and what you do.
So I work in the dispatch center in the Jerusalem region of Magen David Adom. Being a dispatcher means that I am an EMT, because all dispatchers are either EMTs or paramedics. And as a dispatcher, I receive phone calls from anyone who needs an ambulance from the whole country. They have a system in Magen David Adom, which is that whoever dials 101, which is their emergency number to get to an ambulance service, will be answered within 1 to 3 seconds. And no matter where they are in the country, they will receive a response from the first caller who is available, the closest to them. And I, as a dispatcher, answer the 101 calls, receive the information of where the patient is, send the ambulance out right away, and also instruct the person who's speaking to me on the phone as of how to treat the patient until the ambulance arrives. It can be from the simplest thing of a small cut or someone who's dizzy, to CPR, to delivering a baby, to someone with a multiple casualty problems with their whole body in a car accident or anything in between.
So on October 7th, you and your girls were at home thinking that you would just live a normal day, and all of a sudden you got called in to be on the dispatch team. What happened then?
Exactly. So we got actually a message on the WhatsApp group of the dispatchers saying, whoever can come in right now. And as soon as we got that message, I called my supervisor saying, I'm coming with my girls. Is that okay? And only afterwards I realized how amazing it is that she answered the call when I called her to say that I'm coming with my girls. And she said, yes, just come. So I got my girls into the car and we drove a 10-minute drive from my house to the Jerusalem Regional Station. And in those 10 minutes, we had to actually stop 3 times on the side of the road because of red alert sirens. my girls had to lay on the ground with me laying on top of them with my hands on their head to keep them safe.
How did you know how to do that?
That is actually something that they have on the radios all the time, and explanations of what to do if there is a red alert siren, no matter where you are. If you're in home, you go into a safe room, or in any place that there is a safe room. If you're on the road, you have to stop on the side of the road, get out of your car, and lay on the ground and cover your head. So I knew that if I'm with my girls, I'll cover their heads to make sure that they stay safe. So when we had to stop on the side of the road, I lay on top of my daughters. My daughter's lying on the ground, my hands on top of both of their heads. Luckily, I have two daughters, one 12-year-old, one 9-year-old. So I have two hands, one for each, keeping them safe in case a missile hits anywhere near us. And my 9-year-old daughter said to me, "But Mommy, who will cover your head?" And I answered her, "As long as you're safe, I'll be okay."
You had to stop three times before you got to the dispatching station. And then what happened?
And then we got to the Jerusalem Regional Station that luckily... The dispatch center is in a bomb shelter, three floors underground. And the kitchen right next to the dispatching center is also inside the bomb shelter. So I could know that my daughters would be safe no matter what. I left them in the kitchen with the iPad, with a bit of food to eat. And they know the drill that sometimes the mom needs to go into work for a while. And they stay in there and they wait for me. As soon as I started walking into the dispatch center, people said to me, "Be prepared. It's nothing you've dealt with before." I saw chaos around me, and I thought, okay, it's chaotic, but I've dealt with stuff like this before. I mean, I started working in Magen David Adom in 2001 when there were mass terrorist attacks in Jerusalem very often, and I dealt with stuff like that. I dealt with, unfortunately, family members and friends who were injured or killed, and I've dealt with everything. So I thought that these young people don't know what I've dealt with, and I can deal with whatever will come. And then I went further into the chaos, and there were more red alert sirens towards Jerusalem. And I had to call all of the teams who were in the station down to the bomb shelter, which means down to the kitchen where my daughters were. And no one really knew what was going on, but they started talking about how the things that they heard about the terrorists, about the missiles. And at that second, I realized that I was bringing the war to my daughters. But I couldn't stop there, and I had to start answering calls. And one of the first calls I received was actually from a paramedic of ours who was on a kibbutz down south, Kibbutz Be'eri. Very calm, very professional, saying, "Hi, this is Ami from Be'eri. When are you going to be here? What's going on?" And I had no idea what was going on, so I asked her to tell me what's going on. And she said that she has some casualties in her clinic. She brought the casualties who came to her into the dental clinic on the kibbutz. And she said that some are mild, some are moderate, some are serious, some are dead. And she asked me again, "When will we arrive?" And I asked her to please look out the window to tell me what she sees. And she said that she sees terrorists all around. And there's shooting, nonstop shooting. And I asked her if she sees any civilians. And she says she sees them, but they're all lying dead. And then she asked me again, "So when will you arrive?" And at that point, I didn't know what to answer since this was the first call I was answering, and I had no clue what was going on.
The first call.
Wow. The first call I answered. And I turned to my supervisor.
Wow.
And I asked her, "What should I do now? I have a paramedic in Be'eri. She has casualties. What should I tell her? When will we be there?" And my supervisor answered me, and I turned back to Amit, to this paramedic, and I told her, "Amit, I am so sorry. You're one of ours, so I can tell you exactly how it is. I don't know when we will be there. You're in the middle of a war zone, and we're trying our hardest to reach there. And you're doing an amazing job. We will get there as soon as we possibly can, but I just don't know when that will be." And her voice completely changed, and she said, "I understand. Thank you." And she hung up the phone.
Ronit, how were you feeling at that very moment when you were talking to her?
At that moment, I felt completely helpless, completely unable to do my job, completely devastated. It was a moment that I felt that I have no idea how I'm going to help these people, and this is my job, and how can I not do my job? And it was terrifying for me to understand that this is what's going on not only to, I'm sorry to say, not only to the people of Israel, but also to one of ours, to a paramedic of ours, that I can't help her, that we can't get there, that I want to do my job and I just can't do it.
Were you ever able to get them help?
On that day, unfortunately, I was in the dispatch center for 13 hours. And all 13 hours, I feel like I did my hardest to help whoever I could. And no matter what I did, I couldn't get my job done.
Wow. That must have been devastating. You know, like a totally downhill slide.
It definitely was. It was this feeling of helplessness, this feeling that my hands are tied no matter what I try to do, this feeling that over my 20-plus years working in the dispatch, I still do not know how to deal with a situation like this, and I felt like I should know how to do it, and I just can't. And we tried our hardest, and I understood afterwards that they even tried to reach the ambulance driver from the St. Kibbutz from Be'eri first thing in the morning when she called Magen David Adom for the first time, and he didn't answer the call, and they didn't understand why, and turns out that he was already shot dead that morning because we found out that one of the terrorist missions that they had in the papers that they received that we found on their bodies was to destroy every Magen David Adom ambulance, anything that can save people, to destroy them as soon as possible, as soon as they arrive to any city or any village that they reach or any kibbutz. So Avia Chesroni, the ambulance driver, was killed at 7 a.m., and that's why he couldn't arrive to help Amit Man, this paramedic, who was in the clinic for 7 hours, doing everything she possibly could to help her patient.
Wow. Ronit, we're going to have to take a break. Ronit Glazer is my guest. Would you join me after a break? I want people to really hear the challenges that you faced as a dispatcher at Magen David Adom. I'm Judy Redlick. This is Encounter. We'll be right back. If you've listened to me at any time at all, or you've been friends with me, you know that I love to help people tell their story. Another thing I enjoy doing is helping people find their highest potential. If you're in a life's rut and you just can't figure out how to get past your stuck place, a life coach like me could help. Let me walk with you through your journey of transition. I'm a Christian life coach, and to find out more about my coaching, go to my coaching page at judyredlick.com or email me at jredlickspeaks@gmail.com. This is Encounter, and we are talking to Ronit Glazer, who is a dispatcher in Jerusalem. She was there on October 7th, trying to dispatch help to so many that needed the help with the day that the atrocities began in Jerusalem. So you worked there for 13 hours. What about your girls? What did they do all that time?
My girls were, for the first few hours, they were in the kitchen of the dispatch center, and I was aware of the fact that they were there, and everyone who walked into the dispatch kept on telling me that people were taking care of them and they're okay, but as their mother, I had the gut feeling that they aren't really okay. And one of my friends actually answered a call from a 9-year-old who locked himself in the closet on a different kibbutz, on Kfar Aza, together with his 6-year-old sister, and his mother was killed in the living room, and his father was killed at the entrance to the house, and their 3-year-old sister, he was sure that she was killed, that she was taken hostage. And my friend was speaking to them, him saying that his 6-year-old sister is covered in his mother's blood, she is not injured. And my friend, like me, is around my age, and she's also a mother, and as soon as she finished that call, she could not continue answering calls, she was in tears, and she asked for someone to replace her. And luckily, as soon as we were called in, around 70 dispatchers arrived to the Jerusalem Dispatch Center, which is just one of 9 dispatch centers throughout the country that were answering calls on that day. So as soon as she requested to be replaced, someone sat instead of her so she could go out to take a break. And she went into the kitchen, and she started shouting and crying about what she heard, about how devastating it was. And everyone kept on telling her to be quiet, and she didn't understand why. And then they pointed over her shoulder to show that my daughters were there, and they could hear everything that she was saying. And as soon as I understood that that was what was going on, I asked to be replaced also. And I went to the kitchen, and I tried to see how they're doing. And my nine-year-old was pretty concentrated on watching the iPad, whatever TV show she chose to watch on the iPad. And my 12-year-old was very concentrated crocheting. She would not pick up her eyes. And I asked her how she's doing, and she kind of answered, mumbling, "I'm okay." And I said, "Let's talk." And she said, "No." And as soon as I made eye contact and put her on my lap, she started crying hysterically, saying, "Is it true what I heard? Are there terrorists all over the country? And are there kids being injured? And are there missiles? And is everyone being injured? And is everyone in danger?" And she just kept on crying and crying. And I hugged her, and I told her that I'm so proud of her that she's letting out all of these feelings. And she knows that I will never lie to her. And I'm sorry, but everything she heard is true. And it's terrifying, and it's so upsetting, and it makes us feel so helpless, and it makes us feel so unsafe, and every bad feeling she's feeling is absolutely right. And I ask her to just remember one thing, that no matter what, I, as her mother, will do everything in my ability to keep her and her sister safe, which is why I brought her to the dispatch center today. And even though their souls are not safe right now, we'll work on them, at least their bodies are safe. And my sweet 12-year-old gave me a kiss on my cheek and said, "I know, Mommy, I love you. Now go back to work." They understand that this job is so important, that what I'm doing is anything and everything to help lives. I believe that I can't save every life, but I can help every life. And they understand that I'm there to help people, and they feel that part of their being is helping people as well, which is why she sent me right back in. And I told them that I will be in there. If they need a hug, they can come in. It won't be easy to hear what's going on inside, but I'm there to give them a hug. And a few hours later, their father arrived to take them. And they went to him for a while until my mother actually arrived to take them back to my house until I finished my shift that day and went out for another shift the next morning at 4 a.m. But my daughters have had a very difficult time, and luckily they're getting assistance in school. I mean, speaking to psychologists and stuff like that, which is helping them get through this whole phase.
What other stories can you tell me of things that have happened between maybe then and now that our listeners may not know?
Well, one thing I can say is that the first few weeks of this war that began, we worked 12-hour shifts, 12 hours on and 12 hours off, always being prepared for what may happen. And there was, in the beginning, it was dealing with the leftovers from everything that happened in the Western Negev communities. And then it was just waiting until something that we're terrified of that will come from up north, from the Hezbollah, will start. And for those first few weeks, the silence was terrifying. We all worked 12-hour shifts without complaining for a minute because we believed that this was what will happen sooner or later, and we need to be prepared. And ever since then, even since we went back to regular 8-hour shifts, we're still all the time, all of Israel and Magen David Adom feels the need to be prepared. We don't allow ourselves to be in post-trauma. We're still very much in the trauma from 3+ months ago of we were completely caught off guard. Even though Magen David Adom was pretty much prepared for what happened, luckily, because we had enough ambulances and we had the people, we all work from our hearts. So as soon as we were called in, we all came in and we did everything that we could. But we're all prepared for the unknown, which might happen again any second now. We are all on there, on it.
And how can people pray?
I believe that the most important thing for us now that we definitely learned on October 7th is our unity, is how we all together, we are stronger. I mean, it's a saying that's been going on in Israel for the past few months, but I really do believe that this unity that all of a sudden came back on October 7th, the working together, the everyone doing anything they possibly can in order for things to be better is what makes us stronger. So our unity and our strength is what we need in order to continue.
What other things would you like our listeners in America to be aware of?
I would like for the listeners in America to understand, I've heard that there are some people who don't believe in what happened on October 7th. And I'm sorry to say, I really apologize to everyone for saying this, but what happened truly happened. I spoke to people who died on the line with me. I spoke to people who disappeared and afterwards were declared dead. I spoke to people who were terrified hiding in a hole in the ground. It wasn't made up. And what the most important thing to me is for people to understand firsthand from me that this definitely happened, and this is something that unfortunately happened, and that we need the belief in us and the belief in what happened and the belief in the fact that we can continue and we can prevail and we can get through this together.
How do you keep your strength every day and your outlook?
I must say, I do have my down points. I do have minutes that all of a sudden I feel completely helpless. But first of all, as a mother, second of all, as a Magen David Adom worker, and third of all, as an Israeli, there is something in me that just pushes me to say, I got to continue. I am going to manage. We will all manage, and we'll manage together. Again, the unity is something that keeps me very strong.
Ronit, we've been talking about Magen David Adom. What is that really all about?
So Magen David Adom is the national, by law, Israeli Emergency Medical Service. So this is the national EMS for the whole country of Israel, with workers who are from all different parts of Israel, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Druze, every single sector is part of the Magen David Adom team, volunteers and workers. And we also treat any of those people who are in Israel, no matter where they come from, no matter what age they are, no matter what gender they are, just like anywhere in the rest of the world. But we treat people no matter where they come from. We treat people no matter what their beliefs are. We treat people no matter anything that they have to do with. We are the pre-hospital service to whoever needs assistance, no matter where they come from. We are an organization of altogether around 33,000 people who are in Magen David Adom, 90% of which are volunteers. So around 30,000 of our personnel are volunteers. Magen David Adom is a non-governmental funded organization, even though we're the national organization. And Magen David Adom is in charge not only of the pre-hospital treatment of ambulances, medicycles, boats, helicopters, anything that we can do to get our patients to the hospital as fast as possible. We're also in charge of the blood services for the whole country, for the hospitals, and for the army service. We are also the Israeli, it's embarrassing to say right now, but the Israeli National Red Cross Society. And we're also in charge of training throughout the country, of basic first aid training for citizens, which we've been doing a lot of since the war began, of further training for doctors, for nurses, for any community that needs the training. That's another responsibility that Magen David Adom does. And we do everything that we do out of belief that we want to help as many lives as possible.
And how can people get more involved if they would like to donate or learn more?
The best is to actually check the website, which is, in one word, savinglivesinisrael.org. So the website is, in one word, without any spaces, without any dots, savinglivesinisrael.org. I'll say one more time. The website is savinglivesinisrael.org.
stories of heroism. Ronit is one of those heroes. She is a single mom with two girls who she needs to keep track of, but she's also a dispatcher for Magen David Adom, working in Jerusalem to save lives in this horrendous war. I really appreciate you taking the time to share with our listeners today, and we pray that God will protect you all as you do your job and as you help others heal.
Thank you very much, Judy.
I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. That website, again, if you'd like to get involved, is savinglivesinisrael.org.
This has been Encounter with Judy Redlich, informing listeners on local Christian events and matters that affect your lives. Spread the word and invite people to listen to Encounter on KSIV or online at botradionetwork.com.
Okay, sweetheart, I've turned on the nightlight, and here's Teddy.
Grandma, I love it when you tuck me in. You're my best friend. Don't ever leave me. I love you.
Electronic Caregiver helps seniors maintain independence and safety at home with their medical alert system. The Smart Wristband provides telehealth, medication reminders, and personalized messages. If an emergency occurs, loved ones can call for help by pushing the button. More information from Cheryl Wilson at 314-312-0034.
Check out more of Judy's interviews at judyredlich.com. That's JUDYREDLICH.com. Or email her at judyredlichspeaks@gmail.com. Friend her on Facebook, connect with her on LinkedIn.